This show was made at Access Radio Taranaki with help from New Zealand On Air. To find more local content, go to www.accessradiotaranaki.com.
Listen now to Talking Taiao for positive, practical advice with hosts Elric, Sophie and their guests, all to give you the information and tools to help Taranaki thrive. Time for Talking Taiao.
Kia ora koutou, no mai are mai, ki Talking Taiao, ko Eric toku inoa. Welcome to Talking Taiao, my name is Eric, and today I am with Sarah Lucas. Kia ora, Sarah.
Oh, kia ora.
Thank you for being here.
You're welcome.
I think I've heard you have busy schedule and busy life at the moment.
Pretty busy, yeah.
So could you please maybe start by introducing yourself, if anyone is listening and haven't heard your name yet?
Oh, great. I'm Sarah Lucas, fairly well known in the local government community in New Plymouth and Taranaki, and mum to three young men, just recently shifted out towards the coast and living next to the sea in Bell Block, which I'm loving.
Okay.
Mm. I run a small manufacturing business with a lot of environmental and sustainable kind of key themes running through it, and I'm also a trustee for ETEC, which is East Taranaki Environment Collective, which is a big part of my life as well, and just taken over organising an environmental project that'll be happening out at Inglewood. So super excited about that too, so we can dive into a little bit of that.
Yeah, and you were living in Inglewood before. Were you also born and bred in Taranaki?
Yes, born in Taranaki, born at New Plymouth Base.
Okay.
Spent some years living in England as a child. So a lot of my childhood was living on a council estate in the Midlands, in Nottingham. Came back here basically for nature, mm-hmm. and for the environment, and attended university in Canterbury. Also lived down on the west coast of the South Island, down at Franz Josef and Hokitika. And then came back here to kind of raise kids, really. I've done a couple of stints overseas as well, which we might better dive into.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, cool. And so maybe, I think you touched and you mentioned it earlier, but could you maybe briefly list all the professional and personal experiences that you had in connection with the environment? Because I think the small business that you mentioned.
Yeah, 100%. So one thing I am not is an expert, but I am an expert in loving nature and being in nature and advocating strongly for nature and our beautiful environment. Professionally, my business has sustainability at its core. So I run a business called Be Natural Soap. And we started that, my mum and I started it actually together, and she retired very recently. And we started that to make beautiful soap products accessible to more people. Because when I was pregnant with my third child at the time, and I literally could not afford to buy a beautiful natural soap.
Mm-hmm.
And so I went off to Bell Block Library, actually. And we were living at Tarurutangi at the time, just inland from Bell Block. And I picked out a book on how to make soap. And I started making soap. And
wow.
And how, I love it.
How big this soap small business adventure?
It's
more,
pretty big
or more
now,
than an adventure? Is it a big part of the day?
Yeah, I think our first order was $44 to a small business here in New Plymouth. And we concentrated on solid soaps, but I'm now probably known as the leading Castile soap maker in New Zealand. So that's liquid soaps.
Mm-hmm.
And that is 99% of my production really wound down on the solid soaps. So we make liquid Castile from beautiful organic coconut oil from Sri Lanka and avocado oil from New Zealand.
And it's really good. I mean, we've been using it for like maybe a year now, and we love it. And like you said, it's actually so accessible. It's actually cheaper than anything else.
We try and keep our prices, or my prices now, because mum has retired, under our competitors.
Mm-hmm.
And part of that is because, you know, we keep the operation small, we're a lean manufacturer, and I keep my overheads as low as I can. to make that more affordable for other people. So our main competitor is an imported product, which and we undercut them significantly. And I try and minimise plastic in my business, and I have basically been running zero waste for quite some years now. So we recycle everything and we repurpose. So we, you know, we buy our coconut oil in 20 litre pails, but all of those pails, hand on heart, go back into our community. Guides, kindies, and lots of environmental organisations, because they're beautiful buckets with, with
so
lids.
They are reused,
So I've never thrown one out.
Wow.
A major part of my manufacturing is business to business. So we actually make soap for other businesses.
Okay.
And we ship that off. And I've got a beautiful client in Auckland, which is Green Goddess. And we laugh about this. The owners of Green Goddess and I, because we've been shipping the same 20 litre jerry can backwards and forwards between Auckland and New Plymouth for about a decade now.
Wow.
So we've got about 10 containers that are just constantly recycled. Wow. They come, I send them up full, then they send them back empty.
Wow.
And then my 1 litres are all in glass bottles, and many of those get returned, designed with labels, so that they can be used over and over again.
Yeah, it's the one we have at home, yeah.
Yeah, or they're fully
recycled. You should organise a big 10th birthday for the big container that's being to Auckland and back here.
Yeah, we should actually. That would be a good little social media clip.
It should be really cool. Wow. But you do also like have many other things.
Yes.
I think, so if you're listening and you maybe heard, you're not sure if people like heard your name before, like that could be because you're actually running for the local elections as well. The national election, sorry, should
yes,
I say.
Yes, I'm running for Parliament. I have been intimately involved in local government. I was chair of 110 community boards across New Zealand, and I loved my time being able to advocate strongly for communities, and a lot of that was around listening to what is happening in the environmental spaces and with our changing weather and climate, being able to take the community voice and apply that to governance decision making, because actually, you know, locals know best. So my time in local government is currently on respite. I don't intend to leave local government. I'll be coming back into that. And in the interim, I'm running for Parliament this year. I'm running for Opportunity Party. And what attracted me to Opportunity Party was their strong belief and idea, you know, advocacy for nature. As a, we can't make any decisions in the governance sphere in isolation of nature.
And it feels like especially like now, it feels like every year we actually get more reminder how and why this is actually so important, not only in New Zealand but also in the world.
And I mean, we're now having to have elected officials push back on government decree constantly. And I truly don't believe that a lot of people in Parliament at the moment actually understand what is going on the ground. And the And obviously, you know, I've been in places where when you have adverse weather events, it is our most vulnerable that are at the hard end of that. And so, you know, climate, nature, it's tangled up with inequality and our economy and what we prize.
Yeah.
And, you know, we can do better. And we need to change those settings.
Yeah. So I feel like from my perspective, being French, it's quite... Sometimes it's a bit hard, especially working on that space as well, because I feel like here in New Zealand, we are pretty much like really protected and quite sheltered yet for all the big climate change.
Yeah.
And I've been like, so I'm from the southwest of France, and literally, so we are recording early July, so literally like last week, my parents were finishing a week of 26 degrees at the lowest overnight.
Yeah.
And 40 plus degrees during the
day
in the
I've
shade.
Got an elderly cousin in England who's just been admitted to hospital with dehydration.
It's insane. And then it's like, and this change, like in France, happened in not even 15 years, like maybe 10 years. Like we used to have like hot summers, but
beautiful,
different, like on a completely different level.
Yeah, and like, you know, you always look forward to summer and you always look forward to enjoying warm weather, but who wants to go outside and be fried or even sit inside and be fried? Yeah. And that's our reality now. So we've got to look at adapting our urban environments, looking after our rural environments. And, you know, I'm not the expert in that, and you're probably not the expert in that.
Not,
but believe me, there are a lot of experts out there that can help guide us to make really good governance decisions. And, yeah, until that is put front and centre, because at the end of the day, we are nature and nature is us. And we can't actually, we can't step away or treat it as a separate entity. So I think I heard Minister Watts, who's Minister of Local Government, I think I read something in the paper this morning that he wrote to mayors yesterday asking them to not gold plate their climate adaptation and mitigation planning. Now, you know, that needs pushing back on. And that's what I'm prepared to do as someone standing up for my community, because you, any type of climate adaptation or mitigation is never gold plated. It's the basics.
Maybe going back, I mean, there was something what you mentioned earlier. I think we didn't discuss your education. I was actually wondering.
I mean I'm a child of the 70s, so I was one of those people that went to university in the 90s. And I did a Bachelor of Arts, majoring in New Zealand history and sociology, and then a diploma in HR. And I did it all by pen and paper.
No assistance from AI or anything.
No, it was fun though. I loved ruling the margin, you know, with the red pen, and then submitting my double lined essays with pen and paper. And yeah, it was formative living in Christchurch in the 90s. From there, I ended up coming back to the North Island and Taranaki very briefly to work at AFCO work meat plant during its closure, and then ended up in Westland National Park, which is, you know, probably when things started to tie together for my love of the environment, the outdoors.
Yes, I was about to ask you, when is the first moment or the first time that you actually felt the
connection? So, like, I mentioned that we lived in England as children. Oh, I lived in England as a child, and my mum and dad had a V-dub, and we used to spend every weekend just cruising around the English countryside, Lake Districts, Derbyshire particularly, and I think at that point, you know, I was introduced to nature. I also grew up on the North Taranaki beaches as well. And this, those times as a family out in the wilds is, you know, it's something that changes you inside. And coming back to New Zealand, and it was just a given that nature was there, nature supported us, we supported it, and that it was always going to be like this. Living down in Westland National Park was a game changer, because I worked for the Department of Conservation at Franz Josef, and during that time we actually watched the glacier retreat, and that was late 90s, early 2000s, and that was kind of weird, because you're thinking, oh no, it'll stop retreating, or it'll start growing.
Like it's just a bad year.
I went back a few years ago, and you virtually can't see the glacier now from the bottom of the valley. And where I used, if anyone's been to Franz Josef, I used to be able to see the glacier from the visitor centre where I was working.
And it was 20-ish years ago?
You can't see it now.
Yeah.
It's disappearing at a rapid rate. And so I guess living in Westland National Park was a game changer. And then from there, I actually shifted to Greymouth briefly. But then my husband and I renovated a house at a place called Lake Kaneiri, commonly known as Kaneiri, but it's actually Kaneiri. It's east of Hokitika under the Southern Alps, and it's a beautiful 5K long kettle lake. And so I was absolutely submerged in nature for quite a few years, living with, there was 13 of us living next to this lake in the Southern Alps.
Is this also like, did you also get this sense of community? Because I feel like the smaller the place, sometimes like,
100%. And like the coast is very well known for its sense of community and its staunchness around community and looking after each other. So that, yeah, definitely 100%. And you, we all used to work on, you know, weed incursions and rubbish, etc., and so on. So that community really looks after its place. Mm-hmm. And you find that all over, that communities look after their own place.
Yeah, it was. It's actually interesting that you mentioned this part of New Zealand, because my first week in New Zealand, I was only supposed to stay a few months, and I was looking for a woofing place to do a bit of surfing. Didn't know anything about the West Coast. And this guy advertised from Ross, there's a surf beach. And I was like, okay, I'm just going to. So I ended up spending 2 weeks in Ross,
which is
south of Okitika. And this guy was this amazing blog that was just literally welcomed me in the evening, explained to me how to run the little veggie, how to take care of the chicken and the one cow. And then he was like, I'm off to Christchurch now for 2 weeks. Now you're taking care of everything. Bye. And I was really like in this tiny house on the side of the beach.
Beautiful.
And
it's so wild.
Like you say this like small. Yeah, it was so wild and it was so good. I felt like it was exactly why I came to New Zealand, like to be like
there's something pretty magic about the West Coast of South Island. Yeah.
So that was kind of my first week. And also it's tying up with the community sense, because next door, there was this neighbors. There was an American Kiwi couple, and they really they could not believe that I was just by myself for 2 weeks. So I spent the next 2 weeks sharing every single meal with them and helping them with their renovation as well. And it was just an amazing experience. And I felt like completely disconnected to the world in one hand, but at the same time, like completely connected to the to the ground and to the place. And I was like, oh, it's just like, yeah.
And I think like wherever I go in the world, I do connect to the ground and the place.
Yeah.
And whether that's a short holiday for 3 nights in a guest house somewhere or I go and live somewhere for a while, that sense of connection and that energy that you get from the earth under you, it's really strong.
That was, it is a special place, I am. If you're listening and haven't been to the West Coast yet, you should get
definitely
out there.
Go. My son's based in Greymouth at the moment, doing an outdoor education course, and so he's spending a lot of time in the sea, and the surf down there at Cobden Beach is incredible.
I think you also, I've read a little bit about you online, and I think you mentioned that you also lived overseas in two interesting countries.
Yeah.
Post-war Kosovo and Nepal, is that right?
Yes.
Can you
I've lived in post-war Kosovo. So for those of us who are in my age group, you may remember the NATO bombings in Nepal in the year 2000 after the conflict over there. And my husband we were actually only engaged then, and he was engaged to do some demining work over there for a British company. And in my wisdom, I decided I was going to go and live in Kosovo post-war, which, you know, like, was fairly brave at the time looking back. And if my own kids wanted to do that, I probably wouldn't let them. My dad dropped me at the airport in London.
Yeah.
And, I don't know how he did it. Basically civil society was reduced to its knees. There was no infrastructure. The water didn't flow in the pipes. The power was crumbled, the power system had crumbled, churches were on the ground, bridges were lying in rivers, and the place was administered by the UN. So there was K4 soldiers everywhere, so they're the peacekeeper soldiers. So really interesting experience. And the when people are struggling for survival, the last thing that they're looking for is clean rivers. You know, they're not looking out for their rivers and their, and their animals and biodiversity. So quite stark. And then I had a stint in Nepal. We lived there for 2 years, and I've had a very enduring relationship with Nepal. I consider myself Nepalese to a degree, and I've got Nepalese family. And so I go there as much as I can, and I love the simplicity. Nepal teaches you, it changes you, changes your foundation, and I don't know anyone that goes there and doesn't experience that. So the person-to-person connection there is very powerful, very strong. The energy, again, it's got a mystical quality.
Do you think they have a specific connection with nature? Because I know nothing about Nepal.
Yeah, so, I mean, the cities are under enormous pressure because you're talking about the poorest country in Asia. So you have all those same issues of power, rubbish, water. So, you know, nature gets a really hard time in this urban environments. Mm-hmm. But the way in which Nepalese people interact with their natural environment just outside of the city is pretty cool. Very, very light ecological footprints in those countries. So you may go in and fly in and see a dirty city, but you're also actually seeing people that, whose ecological footprints are way lighter than ours. My family over there, you know, they don't own a car. They eat vegetarian. They don't have, you know, 42-inch flat-screen TVs blaring all the time. So their demand of our planetary resources are minimal. One of the things I love over there is, like, I was trekking in Himalayas, and I was in Gandruk, and which is in the Annapurna Valley, and I ordered a vegetable curry just to eat, and I think it was like $2 or something, and the beautiful Didi said, okay, I'll just go and do that for you, and she just went straight out to her garden and, like, harvested the vegetables and threw them into a natural broth. And so, you know, everything is at hand, everything's at place, and people live pretty in tune with the seasons and the natural flow of things. So yeah, lots of learnings from living over there. And again, that contrast of the civic kind of situation around the infrastructure and the collective wealth, being able to look after nature is a juxtaposition and a kind of a contrast to.
It's hard to expect from other countries when they have, like, different problems and, like,
it's interesting because you see kind of rubbish piles and dirty rivers in the urban environment, and yet at the same time, the poorer the nation, the less they're contributing to our planetary issues, because they are well within their planetary limits. I think Nepal had, you know, we've breached our planetary limits here in New Zealand. Nepal's giving to us in that respect. You know, all the poor countries give to us, rich Western countries. So we're on borrowed time.
I feel like also sometimes what we see from, like, us, like, Westerners, we, like you say, we see maybe, like, a not clean-looking city and a bit of waste, and we're like, oh, this is really, really bad footprint on nature, but actually not, because the way they consume and is radically different, and they consume way, way less than us. It's
So it's really, you know, you've got to dive through that and peel back the layers. But I think when I was in Nepal last, we suffered through a massive climate event. So the monsoon had finished, and then there was a river that came over the top of the Himalayas and unleashed into the Bagmati. And yeah, I was sitting in our accommodation in Kathmandu, and 250 people were swept away and killed just outside my window. And those people were the most vulnerable people in the city, you know, living on the side of the river. And it was a real eye-opener for me about the fragility of those, you know, because that event was caused by too much fossil fuels in our atmosphere.
And not by them using too much fossil fuel, it was by us.
So that was a real really interesting event to go through.
If we go back to New Zealand and maybe the small act that everyone can do to protect nature, what would you say, maybe tying up with your conservation work, what would you say that people could do?
So, I mean, I'm also deputy chair of Eastern Taranaki Environment Collective. So, you know, boots on the ground, hands, that's something that you can do with your kids, or it's something you can do on your own to find some peace and quiet. You could monitor a trap line for the Department of Conservation, or volunteer for any number of environmental groups. But I think my number one thing is to just be in nature. Because not everyone's got all the time in the world, and not everyone's got all the accessibility in the world either. But I think, like, for our children, we really need to get them into nature, even if that's driving up to the visitor centre on our beautiful maunga and just sitting for a while, or going for a walk on the beach. It could be as simple as being in the park, because I think, you know, like, a lot of us are actually losing our connection to our natural places.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, my big thing is to make is to encourage people to be in nature.
And maybe the earlier in your life that you actually create this connection and this first connection with nature, and then...
And we know from all the research and all the evidence and all the experience that, you know, give kids a beach or a muddy puddle and they're happy for hours.
Yeah.
And so, you know, if you can instill those values at a really young age and just finding that peace, because we also know the science around being in nature is so good for our bodies and our mental health and our well-being, and then the calmer and the more balanced we are as individuals, the more we have to give back. So yeah, there's so many small actions, and you've got to find something that fits for you.
You can also, I've been thinking also, we are now in winter season, which is great season for tree planting. And I think there's quite a few events happening around Taranaki. So if you want
so you keep an eye on the events that pop up on socials. New Plymouth District Council runs Planting Our Place, and they're always looking for volunteers to help with that. The council also have a volunteer program for pest control. So Janiyah runs that at the NPDC. And then you've got the likes of Forest and Bird. Wild for Taranaki have a massive database on how you can give back. ETEC have a list of volunteers, Taranaki Kiwi Trust, Rotokari. I mean, the list is immense.
There's a lot of great organisations
and
around.
There's things from coastal to forest to really intrepid backcountry to, no, I'm just going to do some weeding at Pukekura Park, you know, like you got friends at Pukekura Park as well. So there's something for everyone. And if you're unsure where to start, go into nature.
Yeah.
Be there. Listen to nature. There's nothing more divine to me than climbing up the mountain just a little bit, up the, maybe up to the Razorback Ridge, and sitting under Humphrey's Castle, and you've got a layer of cloud, the sun on your face, and then total silence.
That
to me is pure magic.
Resetting and
resetting, and then that helps me come back down and do the mahi.
And maybe it also maybe reminds you, especially with your work, like why you're doing this in a way. Like,
100%. And I know like why we are doing it as well is because we have some of the most remarkable, unique biodiversity in the world. And it is also declining at a faster rate than any other country in the world. And so every action, no matter how tiny, is really important. Even if that's just picking up that wetter that made its way into your dining room and putting it back outside, looking after the biodiversity around your doorstep through, you know, caring for the insects, caring for the feeding the birds,
Keeping
your cat in at night.
It's quite also, I feel like it's what we've been asking sometimes of discussions with friends, and I don't do great with like in the sustainable world because I don't do big things, but all the time I'm like, no, like small things are so important things. Because it's so, also you do small thing around other people. And this like small act or small effect that you do is actually like rippling, and then you actually spread, like you're doing a small positive things, and it's like so much better than doing nothing.
Even if you just like have one day a week where you eat no meat. Or take the bike one day. I mean, I know we've heard this all before, but it is very meaningful and it changes the way we design our systems. It changes the demand in the system, and it, and therefore we can change the settings long term.
And we can do it.
Yeah, we can. Like, I mean, sometimes we feel like all the powers are against us, and I've certainly experienced personally how difficult it is to have a voice when you're running from behind, when you don't have the power and the resource to have an instant ticket. But you can't give up, because there are plenty of examples, and we won't dive into them now, but there's plenty of examples of how that passive pressure and that constant effort pays off. And people are always watching as well. So what we do today is being watched by future generations.
Wow. I like this. I think this is a great conclusion on a positive note. And everyone, and you're listening, you can do something. So, Cool. Well, thank you so much, Sarah. My last question, if someone wants to reach out with you, discuss something with you, what is the best way to contact you?
Well, I've got so many portai on, so it depends how you want to reach out to me. But I also have a website, sarahlucas.nz.
Okay, cool.
So
easy.
Jump on there, Facebook. My business is Be Natural Soap. That's on Facebook. Yeah. And it's not hard to find me.
Perfect. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you for having me. It's been amazing.
Thanks for listening to this episode. For more information and others just like this, head along to our website, accessradiotaranaki.com.
This show was made at Access Radio Taranaki with help from New Zealand On Air. To find more local content, go to our website, accessradiotaranaki.com.